Good morning.
Good morning.
I'm doing tea with honey today instead of coffee. My cough is still a little bit there.
Yes, but you've assured everyone that you do not have the plague.
I do not have the plague. Any plague.
Any plague, no.
And if I did, my understanding is that the intraweb that our podcast flows through kills any sign of that. So you can't.
Oh, it's probably some sort of gauze at the end of the just before it comes into your computer that catches all that.
Yep. No. Nope.
All of our listeners should think about cleaning out their filter on their internet just to make sure that, you know, they're not getting infected.
You're going to create panic. Lord.
I think people panic whenever they hear my voice now, period. So it's like, what's the difference?
There is at least one person listening going, wait a minute, I can catch stuff through here? Through what?
Where is this filter he's talking about?
God, great.
It's the one that should be between my brain and my mouth. That's where that filter should be.
I don't know what to say. I just don't know what to say.
Well, let's just get to the getting then.
Yep, service announcement for today. Korchwine. Not a good toilet paper replacement. Just going to say
Yeah, you know, I'd look for leaves over Korchwine. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Scratchy, scratchy.
Yeah, yeah.
So, quick housekeeping?
Sure, let's do housekeeping.
Two new patrons. Thank you, Mark Whitmore and James Powell. We love growing the Hopnology crew. If you haven't been on the Discord channel and joined us as as one of the patrons, you're missing probably 50% of what makes Hopnology Hopnology.
Yeah, it's a good time.
It is. We have fun. We answer a lot of questions. And
answering one right now, actually.
Are you really?
Yeah, I am.
Multitasking. Very uh-huh. Nice. And the kicker is that it's not even us answering the questions a fair amount of the time. We've got this wonderful community of people who are very knowledgeable and very curious and are all trying to help each other, which is a wonderful thing. Without the completely open range kind of Facebook approach where anybody can get in there, we have a good crew that really just wants to be helpful. Good stuff.
Excellent.
Okay, so I think one of the things we were going to talk about today is the fact that it is getting warm out, even though it's March. And again, sorry, North America. We're talking North America here. But we need to talk about dormancy and the fact that it is starting to get warm. There are plants coming out of dormancy. We're starting to see buds and things in pictures folks are sending us. Mm-hmm. And I think you said we'd talk about a little bit of plant physiology here, as well as then what... It's not just your plants coming out of dormancy. Your farm is now coming out of dormancy. And what do you need to do from a mechanical and a business perspective to get rolling here?
Right. Sounds good to me.
All righty. Tell us about the plants.
The plants. Well, long story short, and this will be very short.
I'm laughing because you don't know what long story short means, but please try.
I will set the new definition. Long story short, we know very, very little to almost nothing about plant dormancy. How's that?
That was pretty short.
Mm-hmm.
So what else should people go listen to then?
It's the truth. We know very little about the physiology of plant dormancy. We sort of know how plants go into dormancy. Now, I'm not talking dormancy in like seeds. That's totally different. I'm talking... not totally different. Not that's out of scope for this conversation. We're talking about perennial dormancy. How do plants know when to go to sleep? And what is the impact of plants not going to sleep when they've evolved or been bred to go to sleep? All good questions. Certainly things that we will discover the long-term impact of with our friends growing in climates where they actually never go to sleep. However, we're going to talk about the traditional temperate zone right now and how plants wake up. So the best way I can describe this, plant dormancy, even think about the buds on the rhizome, or for some of us, the buds that are actually aerial buds on the crown. Those buds, basically the fall before, or the summer and early autumn before, basically did all their cell division, and all of those cells that they're going to basically use for the bine for the following year are already set for a large degree, not completely, but all the division that they need to have happen has taken place in that tiny, tiny little bud. And if we zoomed into that bud to the very tip of it, if you can imagine looking at a pencil and looking at the eraser end, after you've used it a bit and it's kind of domed, you know, that's really zoomed in a bajillion times, and that's a scientific term, to what the growing tip on that bud looks like. And it's, if we could zoom in even more, it would be probably of that eraser tip, if you could shave off a layer that's like the width of a piece of paper, like the thickness of a piece of paper, so like 1/1000th of an inch. That's really the only actively dividing cell division region in the plant. Everything else below that, that's packed densely full of tiny, 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 tiny cells, those cells are laying, quote, dormant. So they've already divided. They've stacked up in there, ready to go. Now they just have to get bigger, right? And that's a process called cell elongation. One of the hallmarks that make dormancy dormancy is that cell division has not started. So cell division has ceased at the end of the year. So that basically that cell, the tip of that growing shoot is just lying there in wait. It sort of loaded all of its ammo into the cannon and it's ready to go. So cell division has halted during dormancy. The plant wakes up and those cells start to elongate. The very tip region of the that I described, it looks like the eraser. That's called the meristem. The meristematic region starts to pump out cells again, and the plant's off to the races. So that's sort of the definition of dormancy and when dormancy breaks. How does dormancy break? That's the question. And we don't know.
And
so next question.
Well, yeah. So biologically, that is how dormancy breaks. As a hop grower, physically, what are you looking for? And a question that I've seen a couple times is, how do I know, given the early spring that we seem to be having, or at least the warm weather, that what I'm seeing is dormancy breaking versus just sort of a false positive? Or once it starts, it's starting.
Right. Once it starts, it starts.
Okay.
What you're looking for is certainly aerial buds, and which, you know, are the buds that are on like the crowns of the woody portions from the previous year that are above the soil. We really don't want those anyway to be binds that we train because of likelihood of being infected, or they're just not really all that vigorous. We want the buds that are below ground coming off the rhizomes. So let's say, you know, those we can't see, right, until they break ground. But the ones that are above ground, the aerial buds, when we look at them, they break dormancy a little bit differently. So they can receive light cues. So when the day length is changing and the quality of light is changing because the sun is becoming higher in the horizon as we creep into spring. So the quality of the light changes as well. Those have some impact on some plant hormone generation. However, the single biggest driver there is temperature. Certainly for buds that are below the ground, it's all about soil temperature. There are some light, like I said, those aerial buds do sense light and they can send some cues to the rest of the plant, but by far the driver for dormancy breaking for subsoil buds is soil temperature.
Mm-hmm.
Let's think about that. Let's think about, how's the soil going to warm up? Well, you're like, well, sunshine's going to warm it up. That's true. It's going to warm up the top centimeter or so, but soil is a really, really, really great insulator. So it's difficult for the sun to warm the soil up more than a centimeter deep. And that's if you have bare soil. How many of hop growers have bare soil, right? Any of that debris you've got laying on the ground from the last year, any weeds, any other plant material is going to insulate that even further. Some of you are thinking, wow, that could be good because I'm getting my spring's way too early and my plants are waking up. Maybe. But in general, the way the sun warms the soil is directly through what we call incident solar radiation. So it's the same thing that heats the leaves up hotter than the air temperature. It's just, you know, That's why you burn the bejesus out of your legs when you get into your car with black leather seats in the summertime. Right? Incident solar radiation. So radiant heat. That's not the way the soil warms up the fastest. The soil warms up the fastest when you get warm water penetrating the soil, like rainwater. Even if it's cold and rainy, like, you know, 40 degrees Fahrenheit and rainy, that's still going to keep those buds in that dormant state. It's when, you know, the rainwater starts hitting the 50, 60 degree point and that soil starts to warm up, because the soil's going to absorb the heat out of that water and bring the plant tissue up to temperature. And suddenly it's like, oh, I'm warm for an extended period of time. And you start getting these plant growth hormones, mostly auxins, that start being produced by the crown. And the buds that are underneath there that did all their cell division the fall before wake up, and those cells start to elongate. That's what pushes the shoot out of the ground.
So a day or two of sun, you're not really going to get a false positive or a start and stop, even with some of these weird weather patterns we've been having.
Nope.
It takes much more consistency than that. That's good to know.
And think about the thermal mass of the soil. You know, how much, you know, when it gets cold, it stays cold. Mm-hmm. When it gets warm, it stays warm. And so it takes a lot of energy to bring all of that mass up to temperature. So even if you've got, for instance, you're in the middle of the U.S. and your soil temperatures never get to freezing, or they do, it's very, very shallow, but the average soil temperature down 4 or 5 feet is somewhere around 50 degrees Fahrenheit. It's the top level that fluctuates pretty dramatically, right? That soil takes a lot less energy to get up to temperatures where the bud could break, compared to soil that's in, I don't know, northern Wisconsin or Canada, that gets colder, a lot deeper. So that's one of the reasons we have those areas see delayed spring, not necessarily because, oh, it's so much colder, you know, air temperature wise in the spring, even though the sun is up and we're experiencing, quote, spring type photoperiod. No, it's all about the thermal mass of the soil. And there's so much more soil that's so much colder than, say, someplace in Tennessee, that it takes a lot more time to bring it up to temperatures that'll break dormancy.
Gotcha.
Ah, coffee. Okay. So there's your primer on what breaks dormancy. So yeah, Greg, to your point, if you see, wow, I've got warmer than average temperatures in March and I'm not used to this, you know, let's say it's supposed to be 48 degrees in March, like it is in Wisconsin, 45 degrees in southern Wisconsin, and you get a couple of weekends of 60 degree weather and bright and sunny, no, it's not going to do anything.
Okay.
Because mostly for us, it just means you got a lot more snow melt and that water's cold anyway, so it's keeping the soil cold.
Right. Oh, that's funny. Yeah, we're in the 40s and 50s right now this week, and I just saw a note of mid-70s for Friday.
Nope, I don't even sweat that. You're like, oh, it's going to be nice to get out and be able to do some yard work without wearing a parka, but it's not going to do much for your plants. You might actually see some grasses and stuff waking up, and you might think, oh my God, I'm screwed. Nope. Those are above ground plants. They respond more to photoperiod and light intensity and air temperature than your buds that are underneath the soil. So don't freak out. It's okay. However, but.
Always a but.
Always but. Let's go back to 2012. I always talk about this infamous 2012.
Uh-huh.
In southern Wisconsin, this time of the year right now, in southern Wisconsin in 2012, our average daytime high was 70 degrees. That's ridiculous. That was record breaking. And we figured, oh, it's one of those crazy warm snaps, right? It never stopped. So at that point, snow's gone in a flash, right? And it's raining, but it's warm rain. So the soil's warming up quickly. The hops pop. And we're off to the races. If it had gotten cold again, it would have slowed those plants down. But it didn't.
It wouldn't have completely killed them and started over again. It just would have slowed things down. Because once they're out of dormancy, they're out of dormancy.
Right, correct. So once they're out of dormancy, they're out of dormancy. There are some cold protection proteins that are produced in those plants that will help them tolerate cold temperatures, such that they don't, you know, fizzle and die. But that's one of the it's one of their evolutionary, you know, developments for being a temperate plant. But they are susceptible to freeze damage and chilling damage. If you get, you know, frost or freezes, you will, the growing tips will probably die. I've got some pictures I can share of what that looks like. But certainly, if you get warm rain and your soil is going to be, you know, you can take a soil probe out there and measure the temperature. And if it's 55 degrees in the top 2 inches, then you're going to be waking those buds up and they're going to be going to town.
Okay. I want to back us up a few minutes because, as I typically do, I need to make sure that definitionally people understand some of the crazy words you use.
Meristem?
No. This is more of a regional word than a scientific word. So a few minutes ago, James referenced not having to wear a parka. If you don't live in the frozen tundra, that's a coat. Usually it's got fur around the hood, and it's something you see them wear in, I don't know, John Carpenter's The Thing when they're in, you know, the Arctic.
Anyone in Siberia? Siberia is good for mm-hmm. parkas.
So a parka is just a heavy coat for folks that live in the middle of nowhere. Mm-hmm. Just want to make sure that's clear. All the scientific words were perfectly well explained. I just glanced by the parka. And,
yes.
You know, yeah. I'm worried about some of our growers who are going, wearing a what? Is that some kind of an ornamental garb, you know, to bring out the gods of plants?
Yes, it's a ceremonial garb worn by hop growers in the frozen tundra to bring about the rites of spring.
So there you go. Exactly what parka. It is. Yep. That'll be an easy one for me to put on Instagram, pictures of a parka.
Right along with our mucklucks.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Anyway. So that's what we know about dormancy, how dormancy breaks in hops for as deep as we want to get into this. But what does that mean for you as a grower? And one of the things I've been seeing a lot of chitter chatter around, certainly on Discord and also on the other social medias, oh my God, my plants are growing. And there's all this stuff we talked about already. We talked about, got to get my pre-emergent down. I get my burn back, my burn down herbicides. If I'm doing that, I got to get my fungicide drenches on and blah, blah, blah. And every year, Craig, it never ceases. It's always the same hair on fire response, even though we've been talking about this stuff for months leading up to it. It always catches people by surprise every single time. It's like, are you ready? Well, no, I didn't think, but I thought I had. I'm like, No, remember how I told you needed your pre-emergent down before X, Y, and Z? Yeah, now you're behind the eight ball, and now I'm getting questions. Will it hurt? Will it hurt my plants? You know, they're already coming up, and I haven't been able to get out there and get it down yet. Why not? Now, there are some reasons for not getting your pre-emergent down before shoots come up, like if it's just too damn sloppy and you can't get in the field, because you actually do risk doing more damage to the soil if you're driving through it when it's saturated. You can do some serious compaction to it. But aside from that, there's no reason that, other than either poor planning or lazy, that you haven't had these things done yet. And it's just another example, guys and gals, of the things that we talk about when we say, what is your intention for your hop yard this year? Oh, everybody has the greatest intentions in the quote non-production season of, I'm going to do this better, I'm going to do that better. And we do that by starting with intent and executing our intent. And part of that's being ready for the season.
Yep. You almost said off season. I heard you catch yourself there.
I almost said off season. Yep. Mm-hmm.
But yeah, and that comes back to a plan and knowing full well that, yes, the non-growing season, there are plenty of other things to be doing and watching what the weather patterns are, knowing how to anticipate these things.
You've got to go when it's go time. And you have to be, that means you've got to be ready for it. So for right now, for growers that are in warmer locales where they're, look, we're still going to continue to talk about dormancy. So let's say they are waking up. So our friends in Florida or other places that in South America and New Zealand, Australia, that maybe aren't going through herbaceous death of the top growth. So we're going to talk about the ones that are coming up from the roots again. When is the right time to do X, Y, or Z? I hear that frequently in the springtime. There's a lot of things that happen right now that stack up during dormancy break. There's no reason at all that you should not be out hanging twine right now. Actually, as much as for us in Wisconsin, it would be, we usually wouldn't see any sorts of sign of a plant breaking dormancy until mid-April. Some of you are like, holy crap, my plants will be, 8 foot tall by then. Yep. So when did you get your twine out? Twine should be out hopefully immediately after pre-emergent application. If you get your twine out earlier than that, you're just going to have issues getting your pre-emergent down. But certainly on larger scale, smaller scale, I guess you could do it by hand. But that's that labor component that if you don't have it lined up, whoa, you're behind the eight ball.
Already, big time.
Yeah, yep.
And if you, we've talked about this before, that you better get your twine and all that secured back in October, November. I saw someone on, I think on Facebook, maybe it's on the Discord, talking, with a huge pallet of twine. And of course, with everything going on in the world right now, it's become that much more difficult to get anything from overseas, and that's where all the twine comes from.
Oh, yeah. Yep. Sri Lanka, Indonesia, Vietnam, Thailand sometimes. So yeah, get your twine. If you don't have your twine, check on where it's at and get your butt out there in the yard and start stringing it. We were talking to some folks on the Discord sharing some numbers about twining, the rates of twine tying and how many people you need and how you do X, Y, and Z. And what does that look like as you scale your production? And holy man. The one thing that you can't scale is time. It takes the time that it takes. So make sure that you're taking that into account in everything you're doing in your hop yard, because there may be a point, and hopefully with our help, to where you can get to the point where you're going to say, you know what, I want to scale this. And the first question we're going to ask you is, well, show us your numbers. How do you know you can scale this at this rate? Based on how long it takes you to do things.
Mm-hmm. That is, you're right. That's the one thing theoretically you can buy time by putting bodies at it, but there is a point where that doesn't work anymore and it gets prohibitively expensive. So you're absolutely right. Time is your most, I hate to use the word critical, time is the most critical obstacle, limitation, whatever you want to call it. And the only way to account for time is planning.
Yep. I would strongly urge everyone, if you're not already doing this, set up a spreadsheet, get a legal notepad, I don't care what it is, but tear a hunk of cardboard off your pesticide box and start tracking how much time it takes you to do stuff. That's only going to help you, even if you're not planning to get any bigger or you're not planning to hire people, it's going to help you understand where your efficiencies are to be gained. Because if you're doing this for giggles, I can absolutely guarantee you that at some point you're going to find something else that gives you more giggles than what you're doing. So what are your demands? If you want to keep your hop yard going and you want to be in this, but you don't want to physically do it anymore, what's it going to cost you to have somebody else do it? Mm-hmm. So you can't guess at that. You can say, oh, I think I spent about this many hours. Oh, I think I did this. I think I did. Every time you do that, just ask anybody who's ever built a house. And they'll say, it cost me twice as much as I thought it was going to be. Or it took twice as long. It always takes longer than when you look back at what you assess it's going to take. It always takes more. Mm-hmm. Always. So start logging that now so you're not surprised by it later.
Yeah. And that's really, the point you made before about the fact that when you decide you want to pay someone to do this, that's when this all comes into play. Because you think it took X amount of hours. Now, first of all, you're the expert in your own hop yard. You're probably more efficient and more motivated than whoever you're going to pay to do this anyway.
Oh, that's a good point.
So whatever it took you to do this, even assuming you measured it correctly or you're remembering it correctly, it's going to take more time than that once you hand it over, and then it's going to cost there. It changes the dynamic very, very quickly of what you're trying to get done.
And we've talked ad nauseum in the past about labor and how to get it set up and where do you look for labor and things like that. And if you are planning to pay people to work in your hop yard and you don't have that lined up already right now in the Northern Hemisphere, good luck. Mm-hmm. Now you may be hopefully you are in a location that has better access to this type of workforce. I am not, so it was always a hassle for us. But get them lined up. And if you don't have them lined up already, tick-tock. Yeah.
And if this is sounding a little repetitive, though, it seems the last couple of weeks we've been getting into this labor conversation more and more, partially because it does intersect with everything, and partially as well because the feedback we've been receiving about these conversations has been very, very positive that, you know, these are components of running a business that, you know, everyone's very busy looking at, you know, hey, are my hops coming out of dormancy? What's going on botanically and physically and chemically with what's happening here? This labor piece, the more we talk to people about it, it's something folks want more and more focus on because it's very easy to do it wrong or to ignore it entirely. And then when you go back in and look at your bottom line and go, but why? So we're gonna keep poking at this one.
Yeah, I would expect certainly for the season, that's going to be one of our focuses is the cost of doing what you do or the cost of doing what you want to do, what your dream is. The other thing I would add that sort of caught us by surprise was the insurance that we had to carry for the labor that was going to be out there doing high work. And do you have the appropriate insurance? Or if you're going to be hiring people and you're paying them under the table and they come out there and they hurt themselves, they can sue the living bejesus out of you, certainly in North America. So what is your arrangement there? Don't open yourself up to liability. It is dangerous work. And in my state, it was if you were working higher than 12 feet off the ground, it was considered dangerous. So, well, it's kind of the way it works with stringing twine for hops. Mm-hmm. So that's not something to be trifled with either. Make sure you understand where you sit from a liability perspective. Farm work is dangerous. You fall into that top tier of risky insurance when you start talking about insuring farm workers. So just don't be surprised by that.
Didn't we also have another rider on ours just being within earshot of you, even less than 12 feet off the ground, was an issue that we had to cover for?
We did. We had the old grumpy bastard clause in there, and small children hearing words they shouldn't. Yes, that was in there.
Okay, something to consider if you play the podcast out loud in your farm.
Correct. Yep. Yep, I think that's called public display or something like that. I don't know. We don't want that to happen,
no,
right?
No. And you've got to license that if you're going to play it in a public area, so you can contact us separately about what that'll
do. Oh, that's true. Yep, very true.
You know, something else, just to bring it up as we talk about these topics, when it comes to labor, this is something else we're going to get to in depth on a later podcast, but again, it's come up recently, is equipment. And when you make those moves to go to, you know, very expensive equipment that will reduce your labor costs, but when you look at the price tag, you go, because of what you've got to spend on it, the whole conversation around financing and is it really that expensive if you do it properly in relation to all the labor you have to do? It's too big a topic for right now. But it's something we will spend at least an entire episode on in the somewhat near future, how you properly finance things and just understanding the cost value there.
We cannot overstate that. When we finally turned that corner and understood the power of financing, holy crap, our efficiency increased by orders of magnitude. And you get to the point very quickly when you realize that I can't believe I didn't do this before. But in order to get that financing, you've got to have a good business plan. So see how this all comes full circle?
It does.
Yada, yada, yada. But anyway, we were talking about dormancy and things that breaking dormancy and things that we're going to do in the early spring. So as those plants really start to grow, once they are above the soil and things are happening, it's purely now about temperature during the vegetative growth cycle. So if they're growing and you get a cold snap, they're going to slow down. If you get a warm snap, they're going to speed up. It's pretty linear that way. It's always a gamble every year when you're like, okay, I've got a warm spring. I'm going to cut back. And then you cut back and then the temperature drops for like a month. That happened to me in 2016. 2015, we had a warm spring. Everything woke up. I cut back a bunch and hit a nail on the head. 2016, same thing happened. Warm spring, cut back. Boom, temperature drop was below average for 6 weeks. I'm like, son of a... And then I was behind. All season I was behind. Because the plants just couldn't make it up by the time they needed to top out. So my yield was down, all because if I hadn't cut back that spring, I would have been fine. But because I did, because it was trending that way, I got screwed.
And yet, you know, it was trending that way. You were acting based on past experience. You were doing all the things that we talk about you should do, is that you learn. And we always talk about the Pacific Northwest and how they are generational at this, and the experience that's been bred into not just the plants but the people allows them to more often than not bet in the right direction. I don't think in retrospect, with the same knowledge, you would have made any different decision than you did.
No, I wouldn't have, because you can only go with what you know. Mm-hmm. And really what I learned that year was that as those plants were coming out of dormancy, I was looking down the barrel at another warm spring. Everything was pointing that way. And then we got this cold snap out of nowhere. Looking at the yield decrease that I got because the plants never caught up, or the potential vegetative challenge I would have had I let them grow and not cut them back, I probably would have said, you know what? I'm going to take the vegetative nightmare over the guaranteed lower yield. Because I can always go through and do things like, if they're growing too fast, I can go through and snap the tips off and whatnot. So there was other management strategies I could do to slow them down. Slow the vegetative part down. I can't speed them up. So looking back, if I would have said, I'm on the fence, I don't know what to do, I probably would have said, I'm going to let them go.
Okay.
But that's part of the gamble of farming. You just don't know.
Right. Right. You've got to rely on your gut and your knowledge.
Mm-hmm. It's like being a manufacturer and never being sure that your equipment's going to work when you need it to. It's like, nope, guess I can't do it today because the equipment's tired. Got to wait for another day. That's the sad truth. That's the way it works. Mm-hmm.
It is. And you can beat yourself up like you still do to this day.
Oh, I do. Yep, absolutely. I like the analogy you made about the generational growers, where they generally bet in the right direction. You're gambling. And the best you can do is take good notes. Because guess what? Your brain is awful at remembering things that aren't impactful. They don't make a mark. So when you have, quote, good years, those are the ones where you tend to forget what happened, like what the conditions were, because everything was right and you choose not to remember them. It's all the bad years, just like I talked about. Right, the ones that were impactful. I have to go back and look at the notebook, like I did last night for this talk today, to remember what were those conditions and what was happening.
Sure. Well, it does blend together after so many years.
Because you do the same thing over and over and over again. And
isn't that the definition of insanity right there?
It is, yes. You do the same thing over. So all farmers are insane. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I don't think there's any farmer that would disagree with you. But yeah, I have a log that tells me all of that. I can tell you what the soil temperature was. I can tell you how much precip we got. I can tell you what stage the buds were at during break at any given month, by variety. And that helps me inform my decisions to say, you know what, I'm going to burn back those Chinooks, but I can't touch those Tets or those Centennial. I will be screwed based on, you know, 5 or 6 years worth of experience.
There's the other side of dormancy. There's the dormancy of your farm, the dormancy of your business. We talked about making sure that you get your labor lined up and all that.
Mm-hmm.
You mentioned it's a great time to be stringing because it is. We still don't know how warm it's really going to be, but it's warm enough to get out there and do things. Testing the equipment, making sure everything's up and running and able to work. So there's that piece of it, just making sure you get your farm itself out of dormancy.
Yeah, that's interesting. And I hadn't considered that when we brought up this topic, but you're right. Crack the rust off. Because a lot of us, you know, I would venture to say most of us are not doing this full time. So your life has continued through the winter, through the, quote, non-productive producing season. So I'd be curious to understand what your mentality is as you come out of dormancy yourself, looking at the things that are ahead of you. How do you plan your season? When did you start thinking about this? what are the habits in your life that are going to change? Because if you're doing this part-time, you've had all of the non-producing season of that time that's remaining, given back to you, quote unquote. What have you done with it? And how do you make that switch in your mind to say, okay, now I got to go do this, and everything I was doing to sort of pass my time in the winter is over?
Yep. And if you're anal retentive like me, you go through and go, okay, that 5/16 crescent wrench that's been sitting in the kitchen because I was working on the sink that needs to go back on the pegboard out by the yard. The things that getting every little nook and cranny lined up that you've been neglecting.
I usually am working during this whole period, and certainly later when we had the luxury of hiring people to do the stringing and whatnot, I was usually doing the things that required a bit more skill, like working on the irrigation system, making sure all the hoses were still intact, and that and finding where all the raccoons chewed through them.
Yep.
And, you know, that kind
of
stuff.
And that, of course, is weather dependent, because you don't want to get on that when you've still got freeze coming.
Oh, correct. Yeah. Yeah. But just in general, I mean, it's like, okay, for us, the snow's gone. What needs to be done around here? Usually a lot of tractor work, a lot of dirt work going on at the farm, regrading all of the gravel paths and stuff, because those things get rutted really badly. Potholes get formed over the wintertime. So pushing all the gravel back to where it's supposed to be because you were plowing with the front loader on the tractor and weren't paying attention. So that kind of stuff, usually farm infrastructure stuff. So now's a good time to do that too, as you're sort of like, yep, okay, let's say I've got my pre-emergent down, I got all of the detritus off of the mounds, all the old binds and leaves and all that kind of stuff, and I've got a nice bare mound. I've got my pre-emergent down. My string's coming, whatever. Let's say I'm small, I've got a quarter, half, even an acre that's doable by oneself. So you've got that under control. What else are you doing while plants are breaking dormancy? And it's the little things that are going to, you're going to be so much happier you did in June yes. than now, right? It's like, remember all those shrubby bushes that you couldn't get to last year? Go and dig them out. Go and tidy the place up, because you know you're not going to have time to do that once the season hits.
Mm-hmm. You almost need to look at it as free time. You know, we never use the word off season, but right. this is time to make your busy time later that much easier.
It's the, well, what am I going to do to occupy myself until I have to go to work, mm-hmm. basically. It's like, well, I show up to work early. I'm going to do a little something here. What am I going to do? And it's not time to, you know, doodle on your phone. Go out there, and it's almost like you've been given a little bit of a gift to say, okay, you know, the winter's over. I really do want to get outside because I've been maybe cooped up all winter. So what can I do that's going to be impactful while my plants are breaking dormancy? And get things neat and tidy. That's my number one thing. Have it looking fantastic. Have it looking immaculate, because it's only going to help you with your time management later in the season. Mm-hmm.
And if you think about last season, think about those things that in May and June you were scrambling around going, shit, 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 shit. See what you can do now. Think about what really, really hit you hard in the early season last year that maybe you can get an early start on here and not make those same mistakes again.
Fair.
To your point, it's easy to, you mentioned earlier, it's easy to forget how long certain things took.
Oh, yeah. It's the, as I call it, the pain of harvest is past, and everything is a blissful memory. Not really.
Anyone who's ever done long nights waking up every 45 minutes to feed a newborn will tell you that when the second child rolls around, you'd forgotten what it was like the first time, because you remember it as, oh, it wasn't that bad. So you wake up every couple hours. There's this fog, the fog of war, I suppose, that that clouds your memory of just how exhausting and painful that is. It's no different than for anything else. You remember the good stuff.
You're going to find something else that gives you more giggles than what you're doing.